Hi, my name's Alex Donaldson, and I will be conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust and the One Another Project. The date is the 9th of July, 2009.
9th of August.
9th of August, sorry, 2009. If you could please state your full name, your age, if that's okay, and where you're from.
My name is Kylie Wilson. I am 26 years old. I'm from Coventry.
And how are you doing today?
Warm. I'm surprisingly calm, actually. I thought I was going to be in a much more tense state. I'm sure this means that I'm only going to sort of get up there and suddenly go, oh God, oh crap, oh. But yeah, I think that's a fair description of how I am today. Excited though.
So what actually inspired you to put yourself forward for the project?
My friend Andrea posted on her blog how she'd signed up for this, and just out of idle curiosity and probably boredom, I sort of clicked through to see what it was, and then I thought, oh my God, this sounds awesome, I might as well enter the draw myself. And then I was really surprised that I got through, because I'd completely forgotten that I'd applied. So when I got it, I said, no, you're joking me, surely not, wow, awesome. And then yes, I got fully excited, and so that was pretty much what inspired it. Unfortunately, my friend Andrea didn't actually get a spot on it though, which I think kind of cheesed her off a bit that I didn't, she didn't, but never mind, be cool.
And what actually inspired you, where did you actually hear about the project?
Oh, well, from my friend's blog, basically. She just posted a link and said, oh, I'm doing this should be fun. I hadn't heard of it up until that point, so it was just word of mouth for me.
And what are you planning on doing today with your hour?
I'm planning to put up a big banner, which shouldn't take more than 3 minutes, God willing. then I've got a megaphone and a speech, and I'm going to be talking about the Youth Fight for Jobs campaign, which I'm involved with. It's a campaign about youth unemployment and how it's sort of shooting up, and how we need to sort of be fighting for more jobs and better rights for those who are both in work and out of work, and you know, for those in education, we're sort of looking at sort of leveling the playing field a bit more, basically, because young people are really experiencing a lot of tough times at the moment. So yeah, I've got involved with this campaign, and as soon as I knew I was up here, I thought, well, that's what I'll be doing then.
So how long have you been involved with this campaign for?
Well, it's only been going since January. I think my first involvement was when I went to the marches in one of the marches in April. I went to two marches on the G20. The first was the massive one, the Put People First one, on the Saturday, and then the Youth Fight for Jobs one was on the Thursday, the second, which luckily isn't the one where you had loads of people smashing banks up and stuff. I sort of got involved after that. I ended up going to the conference, and since I'd been to these two things, they said, oh, well, why don't you sit on our steering committee? I'm like, yeah, all right then. So I sort of seem to have got involved that way, but it's become something I really care about as well. So, you know, it's something that I've put a lot of work into, and I care quite a lot about it. And I know all the other people in the campaign do as well. We've got about 1,000 supporters nationwide now. So it's going really well, actually.
And is this something that has directly affected you?
Not at the moment. I'm not unemployed. Depends whether, you know, when the next government comes in, I'll probably, my job might be at risk, because I work for a government quango, and they're apparently going to, you know, cut all the quangos, but then everyone says that and it never happens. I don't know, but if that was to happen, it probably would affect me, yeah, because I'm on the bottom rung of where I work, and it's always the bottom rungs that get cut first. So, you know, I think I'm potentially at risk, but also in my earlier working life, you know, I've experienced the things that young people have in the workplace, you know, the lousy apprenticeships that don't pay the minimum wage, the fact that you're first in, first out, most jobs available are crap jobs in the service industry, and you know, you don't get equal pay, you don't get equal rights, and you get treated like crap while you're there, basically. A lot of people experience that, and you know, I've experienced that, and I think it's going to only get harder for people as it goes on, you know, especially as there's less and less jobs to go into and more people looking for them. So it's really tough for people at the moment. So, you know, I kind of, while it's not affecting me immediately at this moment, I know sort of roughly how it feels for other people, and I think that I should do my best to help them, really.
Yeah. And have you seen it happen to people that you work with, friends?
I've seen it happen to friends, yeah. I've had at least two people that I know have been made redundant or in, at severe risk of being made redundant soon. No, more than that, actually. At least five people that I know. I know a few other people who are coming out of university, can't get jobs, etc. So, you know, quite a few people I know, yeah. And other people I talk to about the campaign, a lot of them say, yeah, actually, this is really bad, this is what's happening, and good on you for standing up and fighting for young people, basically, because, you know, not a lot of people are at the moment, which is a shame.
And what do you think the main problem is for this kind of lack of employment, this kind of unwillingness to give undergraduates jobs at the moment?
Well, you know, the recession is the excuse that everyone's using. I mean, before the recession, life wasn't easy for young people anyway, but now a lot of bosses are using the recession as an excuse to cut jobs, you know, and it's normally the lower ranks, which is inevitably the younger people who are lacking experience, so don't get sort of up into the top jobs just yet. So, and things like, say, Xavier or Woolworths closing down, you know, a lot of their workforce would be young people, so you'd end up, I think it is largely the recession, basically, unfortunately, and it shouldn't really be the case. Even outside the recession, we're going to be campaigning, to be quite honest, because even outside of those conditions, it's not easy for young people in the workplace or outside the workplace. You know, you get less money, less rights, etc. So it's not easy.
And do you think there are any particular areas that are more worsely hit than others?
The service industry, where most young people work, really. I think it's, I've got a statistic somewhere, so I'm useless without my notes. It's about 50% or something of young people are working in or have worked in the service industry, which has high staff turnover, low unionisation. So, you know, employers love temps, basically, because, you know, you can bring them in, you don't have to pay them as much as other employees, and then you can get rid of them as soon as you like, basically. So young people end up in those sorts of like high turnaround things, and as soon as an employer thinks, well, actually, we could outsource this to India, it's always the young people in, say, the call centres who get fired first. So, you know, call centres, shops, that sort of thing, all the businesses that are suffering the most, that's where you're going to find the most young people suffering.
And what exactly are you pushing for, and what are your kind of solutions for these problems?
Well, our aim is, we have several aims. The first is to eliminate uneven wages along age line, so equal wages for all ages, if you want to sloganise it. We also want to campaign for sort of greater union rights, greater awareness of how unions can help young people. We want to lobby the government for more and better jobs for young people. They've got the Future Jobs Fund coming up, but that is actually going to fall really short in terms of how many people it's going to help and how it's going to help, what sort of time span it's going to help people for. And we're sort of campaigning that these jobs are going to be sort of long-term, worthwhile, socially useful jobs, like, you know, like plumbers, electricians and midwives and nurses, all those people that we really need for the country to keep working and that sort of thing. So we want them to be decent jobs for young people, not just crap ones. We also want to eliminate tuition fees because it's turning education from a right into a privilege, which it shouldn't be that way. You know, everyone who is capable of getting a higher education, surely it's in the government's best interests to invest in the future of young people and not buy, you know, your average graduate leaves with uni with £17,500 of debt, you know, and that's not right. So that's another one of our aims. Think that's all of them. I might have forgotten one, but that's the main thing. And we're aiming to do this partially through campaigning at street level, like today, partially through, say, the trade unions as well. We've already got three major trade unions on board. We've got the CWU, who have been supporting me today. They've helped with transport costs and that sort of thing, which was very generous of them. And we've got the RMT, the Rail Workers Union, led by Bob Crow, who some hate, some love, depending on whether or not you've had to take the London Underground on strike days, I suppose. And we've also got PCS, who the public sector, public and commercial services union, I think it stands for, but they're the ones who, their workers are generally the ones who work in the job centres, in that sort of area, you know, in the public services, where, you know, a lot of jobs are also being cut there, and they're having to bear the brunt of the shortfall as well while they're there. So, you know, they know a lot about this sort of thing as well, so they're very definitely on board. So, you know, we've got that sort of support there, which means that we can do things like put in early day motions into Parliament, we can lobby MPs, that sort of thing. I mean, we can lobby MPs anyway, but it gives it that bit of extra strength when you do it through the unions, and, you know, so we're going to be pushing for more and more union support, that sort of thing.
And do you think that within the kind of undergraduates, younger generation people looking for jobs, what are the kind of equalities, as in, is it more difficult for men and women to get jobs, to access jobs, between races?
Well, I'm not too sure about the gender lines, although, you know, there's always a bit of a, some people are more reluctant to employ women just in case you get pregnant, etc., etc. Apparently that's sort of some sort of heinous crime. But the statistics amongst sort of racial boundaries, you know, are quite interesting. I don't have up-to-date ones for unemployed black people, but some figures I did have was it was about 31%. Youth unemployment amongst black people, which is, you know, kind of really sad, because you do still get racial discrimination, and you still get, like, the BNP as well, you know, who are trying to, every time you get redundancies, they always try to play the old ethnicity card, you know, oh, British jobs for British workers, they're coming over here and taking our jobs, when in fact it's only like 1 in 7 people who's employed was born outside the UK. You know, and you get a lot of unscrupulous employers really exploiting migrant workers as well. So, you know, it's younger people, especially from overseas or whatever, they're going to be finding it very tough as well, you know. But to be quite honest, because we're generally quite left-wing, and therefore we don't like disability or age or sex, or did I already say gender? Sex, gender, whatever, religious, any of that sort of discrimination, really. We don't like that. So, you know, we're not specifically targeting any groups, but we do recognise that it is tougher for some groups than for others. But what we're really campaigning is an across-the-board equality, essentially, for young people. And it doesn't matter where they come from, whether they're gay, straight, Mormon, Jewish, or Islamic, or anything like that, you know, it doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter, in fact. But to some people it does, and that's really sad, because we should really, as a race, or a species even, sorry, have evolved beyond that by now, I think. So, yeah. I think I've probably gone off point a bit, sorry.
And can I ask you a little bit about yourself?
Myself? Sure, what do you want to know?
Where you're from, where you grew up.
Oh, right, well, that's an interesting question, and it could take some time to answer. Brief potted history. I was born in Devon, 1983, lived in sort of the Dartmouth area until I was about nine. Then my mum and stepdad moved to the New Forest for a couple of years. Then my stepdad got a job in Saudi Arabia, so I sort of spent some time out in Saudi Arabia, but also going backwards and forwards to boarding school in the UK, because I went to the Royal Hospital School. It's a naval school, and because my dad was in the Navy, he got sort of enough discount to be able to just about afford to send me there, which was quite good for my education and everything. After that, I came out of school, stayed in Surrey for a bit, then went back down to my parents. Unfortunately, things weren't very good at home when I left school, because my mum, she's now recovering, but she's an alcoholic. So I kind of ended up having to move out of home because things were really difficult there, into a homeless hostel. And from there, I moved in with a boyfriend in Gosport, in near Southampton, near Portsmouth, and sort of lived there for a bit. Then I met my husband online. We already knew each other from when I'd been at school, online only though, and we kind of ended up getting together, and that's how I moved to Coventry. So I think that's about as much of my life story as I can tell you. Okay. Yeah, I've been around a bit.
So what age did you move out of home into the homeless shelter?
I was 18. 18 and a half, I guess. So yeah, it was, I was nearly 19. It was December when I moved. It was a pretty unpleasant situation all told though. But luckily I never actually had to sleep rough or anything. And I didn't stay in the homeless hostel too long because I moved in with my boyfriend not long after that. So that was a relief.
How was that experience for you?
Well, living in the homeless hostel, it was actually all right, you know. It was sort of three houses on an estate, basically. They looked like normal houses, just had a few other young women living there. And it was all right. It wasn't the Ritz, but, you know, I'm not the sort of person who wants the Ritz, you know. I know I went to boarding school, but that doesn't mean I'm posh. You know, I'm actually not the classiest of birds, as many of my friends often tell me. But no, it was an all right time. I wasn't there for long. I was working at a pub at the time, and the pub was the worst bit, actually, because I've been washing dishes there, and that was a horrible, horrible job. And the bosses who moved in there when I was living in hostel were just absolutely, I have no words. The the boss of the pub, he, because I left the light on once at night in the little changing area, he got really angry with me, and he told me that if I did it again, he'd remove the light bulb. I didn't know at the time that that was illegal, but next time I forgot, you know, after however many hours split shift, about midnight, I'm absolutely knackered, covered in rubbish from washing up, and okay, I left the light on. Next day I came in, there was no light bulb. I didn't know that by law you actually have to provide a well ventilated and well lit area for people to get changed in for your employees, but I don't know if he knew either, to be quite honest. He was just being a git. But yeah.
And you said that you lived in Dubai?
Saudi Arabia.
Sorry, Saudi Arabia.
That was quite weird. I mean, I only went out there for school holidays, and it was brilliant, you know. I've never really had that many sort of tropical holidays, as it were. So it was really nice to go out there, and it was sunny, and it was a real culture shock because there's so much segregation between men and women. Women aren't allowed to drive. You're not allowed to drink at all, but several of the expats found ways around that, like the diplomatic channels. Sorry to any Saudi Arabians listening to this. But it was really interesting, and I quite liked the whole way they had different, you couldn't go shopping at certain times because when it was prayer time, you know, five times a day, everything shut down, everything, the swimming pools, the shops, the well, I suppose the hospitals didn't, but the restaurants and everything, you'd get like your first prayer call, all the lights in the shop would dim, and you'd have to get your shopping and get out, and then everything would close for about half an hour or so, maybe an hour. And yeah, during Ramadan apparently it was all the time, but I was never there for Ramadan. But I would have loved to have been, you know, I had some really cool times out there, you know. Yeah. The beaches were nice.
Yeah. And what kind of effect do you think that's had on you as an individual? How much time did you spend out there?
Couple of months a year for about 3 years, so not that long. But it certainly gave me an appreciation of what we've got in this society, you know, in terms of equalities. Not only is there a lot of inequality between men and women out there, there's also a lot of caste inequality, there's like class inequality, there's, you know, they've got quite a rigid class system. And most of their workers are migrants over there, and they live in really poor conditions, actually. We went to dinner with a doctor and a nurse from a local hospital, and their flat, you know, we had a nice house, you know, we were expats, we had a lovely house. And then we went to this doctor and this nurse's place, and they were stuck in this horrible little flat, bless them. And it didn't have, I say it didn't even have air conditioning, but, you know, everything else out there was air conditioned, your houses, your cars, everything. And, you know, they had a ceiling fan. Even in this country, everyone knows that a ceiling fan is no protection against heat, you know, it just moves the air around a bit. And it had cracks in the walls, and they were obviously kind of impoverished and stuff. And you think, in this country, you know, doctors and nurses get paid at least a vaguely fair wage. So, you know, it did give me a certain appreciation of those things, I think. But yeah, and their culture was entirely different. It was great.
So can I just ask what you actually do at the moment?
I'm a website assistant for a government organisation called BECTA. They're the Government's Agency for Technology and Education. They're a quango. And they sort of seek to inform, seek to make sure that schools are using technology correctly and make sure that they're getting the best deals, that sort of thing. And sort of really encouraging more sort of technology and education in general, because it's a great tool. My job is largely sort of uploading and sort of content management, that sort of thing. And I also sort of gather the statistics for the website, which is my own sort of area of work, really. But outside of that, I have quite a full life. I do a bit of political campaigning, like today, and also I've got an allotment. I share an allotment with two of my friends, and, you know, just do all sorts of things. I like arty things and going to gigs. I work at festivals during the summer, that sort of thing. So, you know, my job's sort of a bit 9 to 5, and it pays the wages and stuff, but I work to live, not the other way around, really.
So how do you choose to spend your free time? What are your interests?
I spend far too much time on the internet, for a start. I read a lot. It depends on the day, really. Sometimes I go down to the allotment, sometimes I'm going to a socialist meeting or some other sort of campaign meeting. That's been a lot of my time lately, far too much, in fact. Sometimes I hang out with my friends and just natter. Sometimes I go out and get horribly wasted. Not often, though. I'm not the sort of person who goes clubbing or whatever. I like listening to music. Can't play a note, but my husband can, you know. So, yeah, we go out to the odd gig here and there, go to the odd festival. Otherwise sort of stay at home and collapse, really. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. And just to go back to your Alma Plinth, what exactly are you planning on doing?
I've got a big banner that I'm going to put up, and I've got a megaphone, and I've got a nice long speech that I'm going to read, but I've also got some people coming down, hopefully, who are going to do some nice chanting and things with me, so it should be a lot of fun. And of course we're promoting the Youth Fight for Jobs campaign, so it's going to be quite exciting.
And ultimately, what are you wanting to get out of today's experience?
to get through it without making a complete twat out of myself, if I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah.
Good. And hopefully raising the campaign's profile a bit and having a good time as well, you know, and as long as the banner doesn't fall over or I fall into the safety net or anything embarrassing like that, I'll be happy.
And are you wanting to engage with the public?
Yeah, somewhat. I'm going to be, hopefully, you know, while I'm going to be sort of holding forth quite a lot, I will be trying to get my friends into sort of the odd sort of youth fight for jobs sort of chant. But I'll also have people on the ground who've got like petitions and things and membership cards for the campaign and stuff like that that they can join. And hopefully they'll be working the crowds a bit as well. So with their support, you know, hopefully we will engage the public a bit because I would really like to do that and I'd like to see the campaign at least get a bit more support as a result of today. But at the very least, you know, we'll have the publicity, and they say there's no such thing as bad publicity unless, of course, one of its members of the steering committee falls off into the plinth and somehow kills herself. Into the safety net, sorry. You know, that would be quite catastrophic, but I'm not going to be pretending to be a cat like George Galloway and Big Brother or anything like that, so we should be safe there.
And how are you feeling about the live streaming?
I'm planning to completely ignore it. I'll give a shout out to my family and friends who are watching, but otherwise the people on the ground are my main concern because they're the here and now. In a way, I know everyone else is the now, but they're not here. So, you know, I'll be mostly concentrating on the people around the plinth because I think it's almost more about that. I know the internet element is very, very important, but I think it's the people on the ground who get the full spectacle, as it were.
So. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so, apart from thank you very much for this very exciting opportunity, and thank you to the CWU and all my friends and family for their support.